Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Gun control is always a difficult conversation, or it's a difficult subject, one that people feel very passionate about. And South Africa, of course, is no exception to that. There has been a push. There has been a push by the government to limit private ownership. If they intended to do so, I can't imagine that the recent events would have done that them any good. Gideon Joubert is a founder, is the founder and editor of Paratus. He is a board member of the Gun Owners Association of South Africa. He has been very vocal before all of the looting and these events started. He's been very vocal about fighting the limitation on private gun ownership in South Africa, and we wanted to chat to him. Good morning. How are you?
Very good morning to you, and thank you for having me on. It's always an honor being on Chai FM.
This is something that you're very passionate about, and it certainly didn't start in the last few days when we've seen people taking up arms in order to protect their own property. But I imagine, not that you wished for it, but that this could be a perfect illustration of why private gun ownership is required.
It is. I'm not going to refer to it as bittersweet, because it's very bitter. It's absolutely terrible to see what's been happening across KZN and parts of Gauteng, and sporadically other parts of the country as well. But the one thing that does leap out at me is thank goodness this happened before the particularly crazy amendments that government has been attempting to push through since 2018, that would, for example, make it not only unlawful for you to own a firearm for self-defense, but if you read into that proposed amendment a bit deeper, make it even unlawful for you to even use a firearm for a defensive purpose at all, as well as puts in crazy restrictions on people. And one of the examples of what has happened, apart from the fact that communities have been left in some sort of security vacuum across most of the Durban metro, the police just are not capable of securing a geographical area that large against a violent mob as widespread and as coming in as large numbers as they do. And the result of that has been many communities essentially left to fend for themselves in order to organize their own security and own protection. That has happened. There are many success stories. The reason I sound the way I do is because I almost haven't slept for the past three days because I'm just inundated with communications from these various communities as diverse as you can imagine.
Are you based in Durban?
I'm based in Cape Town, so I am far away from any of the action. Mm. But what they've done is they've organize themselves into bodies. Not everyone has a gun. So those that have guns have been given certain duties. Those who have not have been given other duties. They've coordinated with local law enforcement and SAFs nationally as best as they could and can, to the extent that when the police runs out of ammunition, they would give the police officers their own personal ammunition so that these officials can go and perform their duties and do their jobs. Mm. And if it weren't for them being able to reload their own ammunition on reloading presses in their homes, they would have no ammunition with which to defend their communities. And that's one of the things that the proposed amendments would outlaw, is you would not be allowed to reload your own ammunition. And most of them are using sport shooting rifles, shotguns, to perform those duties. And you hear horrific stories of, three attempts. For example, on Reservoir Hills the night before last, of large groups trying to gain access to that residential neighborhood to loot houses and probably set fire to them. And the only thing that kept them out was the organized community members who were armed. So that is the unfortunate truth of the matter on the ground level.
You know, it's always this battle because we pass laws almost on a, or we look to impose laws on a very equal footing. So in an ideal world, well, gun ownership is limited, but that presumes that everybody's abiding by the law, which of course is a complete fallacy when we have a situation like this, or when you're in a robbery of any sort. Nobody's saying, ooh, I can't take a gun because that's illegal. You know, when I'm now going to rob somebody, it's just almost an absurdity that there's this expectation that criminals are going to adhere to a same system of laws that non-criminals are meant to be adhering to.
Well, that's the crux of it. And even before this present catastrophe crisis, for want of a better word, that we're presently living through, happened, there was the Civilian Secretariat of Police actually commissioned a study into exactly that, into how effective the Firearms Control Act has been over a 15-year period from the year 2000 to 2014 at actually exercising some sort of influence over, you know, not only murder, but violent crime rates and general crime rates as a whole. And the Witt School of Governance did the study at taxpayer expense, and they did a remarkably good job of it. It's a 178-page document. The research methodology is sound. It was a professionally compiled study, and their findings completely contradict what the government is doing, in the sense that they actually, in the recommendations, rather sort of chastened the government and said, "Listen, you need to shift your obsessive focus from writing more gun laws back to the one thing that we found works, and that is policing." And they found no evidence that the Firearms Control Act had any influence on crime at all, and that a mere 5% of reported crimes is even relevant to it. What they did find made a huge difference was effective and strong policing, and that any absence of effective and strong policing, regardless of how strict or lax the gun laws are, that the violent crime rates would always increase. And in reverse, if you had a system of strong and effective policing, regardless of how strict or permissive the firearm laws are, you would have less crime and less violence, which is not really a controversial thing to say. I mean, again, in the crucible that is KZN and Durban at the moment, the absence of law enforcement has allowed this type of criminality that we're presently seeing to thrive unchallenged. It makes no difference how strong or weak any of our laws and ordinances are, even the Dangerous Weapons Act. It's the fact that if there is policing, there will be, you know, law and order will prevail, and where policing is absent, it won't.
Do you think that the initiative, well, following this period, and let's assume, as I do, that things will settle down and probably go back to some of the issues that we had earlier, but things will settle down. Do you think that this government drive or initiative to limit the ownership of private gun ownership, do you think it's all but dead?
I would hope so, and not because government is particularly responsive to facts and opinions contrary to their own preconceived ones, but this has always been a battle that is fought in the highest court of the land, which is the court of public opinion. And from what I'm seeing from the general public is that there is a sudden understanding, almost an awakening, of what the so-called gun nuts have been harping on about all these years. Is, you know, it's not that we expect or want chaos. It is that in that event of chaos, regardless of how small or large a scale it is, whether it's a personal attack on you by a single mugger or criminal armed robber, whether it's this large scale, widespread looting and arson, a coordinated assault on our democracy, if you do not have the tools to go with the talent, you're going to have a very hard time at keeping yourself and your families and the people who matter to you safe. And I think that penny has to a large degree dropped.
Well, it certainly must have in Natal, in KwaZulu-Natal, because if one doesn't want to go there, but if you do have to think about what could have happened if there weren't private security forces who were armed, if there weren't private individuals who were armed, it's almost unimaginable. There's no way to stop a situation like this.
Well, that's the thing. If it weren't for those people, and it's private individuals as well as private security, and I see the Minister of Defense had a lot to say about private security about a day ago, when she accused them of, you know, that they're not doing enough and that they're so well armed and well trained. And I thought, but Minister, the government has been through repeated efforts at amending the CERA Act as well as various other laws pertaining to private security companies, have been trying to pull the teeth out of all private security that isn't somehow directly, you know, answerable to the state. Yet now you are admonishing these people for not doing more. It paints a picture of a inept government that has completely lost control over the situation.
And disconnected, because, you know, if you look at the size of the private security industry in South Africa, it didn't grow because people were looking for a couple of thousand rand to place their money somewhere and they didn't know what to do with it. It grew out of necessity. Because people felt insecure and there was a lack of confidence in policing. So it did grow out of that, and that's why they exist. You can't ignore that, or surely government can't ignore that.
No, they certainly cannot, because you're absolutely correct. The reason why our private security industry is as massive as it is purely because there was a vacuum that existed. And this was a vacuum from years ago. I mean, it wasn't a sudden thing or a recent thing. And that was filled by the private sector. And if we look at policing trends in South Africa, I think we reached the peak of our post-2000 policing in about just right about the World Cup, where there was an incredible drive to secure the country, so to speak, you know, for this global event happening. Almost immediately in 2011, that the intensity of policing as well as its professionalism started taking a massive decline, or rather rapid decline, and that's when our murder rate started increasing again for the first time in nearly 15 years, and it hasn't stopped increasing since then. What we've subsequently been saddled with is the result of that was in 2018 October, Kehla Setola, the National Commissioner of Police, admitted to Parliament in a rather now infamous video clip that's circulating everywhere that the SAPS is overstretched and that it is impossible, that was his exact word, impossible for the police to fulfill its constitutional mandate. And the constitutional mandate of the SAPS, one can just Google, but it's four small items, one of which is to secure the citizens of the Republic and their property against crime and violence, which, you know, we can patently see is not happening. To make that worse, so there was already an admission of a massive problem, a huge problem in 2018 October. Not even a month after the National Commissioner said that, there was an announcement of 3 years of consecutive budget cuts starting in the 2020-2021 financial year and terminating in the 2022-2023 financial year. And these budget cuts would have amounted to about 19 billion rand, which was 19% of the SAPS budget. Now, last year, due to the whole lockdown story, and I presume a significant decrease in tax revenue for the government, they cut the SAPS budget not by 5 billion as originally planned. They cut it by 6. So there was actually a 6% decrease, but they hid that from the public by saying, oh, but they injected 7 billion rand. Sorry, they cut it by 7, but they injected 6 billion rands worth of emergency funding to fund PPE and overtime and all this sort of stuff as the police were enforcing these lockdown regulations. So there was actually closer to a 6% budget cut last year. This year, I see the cuts. It would have been 6.5 billion. It's already been reported as being 11.5 billion. So you're looking at 11.5%.
Yeah. So I mean, unless somebody, I do need to wrap it up, unfortunately, but unless the private sector steps in, there would be absolutely no chance. And what I found interesting as well is when we speak to the police, which we often do from the neighborhood police stations, what we find is incredible cooperation on the ground between police and private security. It's at a different level that it becomes a problem. Gideon, I do unfortunately need to leave it there.
No
Absolutely
problem.
Fascinating to speak to you and to get a perspective around the recent events. Gideon Hubert is the founder and editor of Apparatus. He's a board member. He is a board member of Gun Owners South Africa.